From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Soon after Universal Health Services agreed to the settlement with the Department of Justice, the company was facing a new kind of pressure. This one was coming from an unlikely but powerful advocate.
Paris Hilton is a new breed of celebrity, famous for being famous.
That's hot.
That's hot.
That's hot.
That's all from the documentary, This is Paris. In the 2000s, she was entertaining millions as a fixture of reality TV and the tabloids. But all the glitz covered up a painful past. When Paris was 16, her parents believed she was too rebellious and sent her to a psychiatric facility in Utah called Provo Canyon School.
I tell my story not so that anyone feels bad for me, but to shine a light on the reality of what happened then and is still happening now.
Paris was testifying before Utah's Senate Judiciary Committee in 2021. She was 39 and had recently gone public with physical and sexual abuse she endured as a teenager.
Although Provo Canyon School marketed itself as a premier treatment center, it was as if it was hell itself on earth. I cried myself to sleep every single night, praying I would wake up from this nightmare.
Paris stayed there for 11 months. Universal Health Services didn't own Provo Canyon when Paris was there, but they bought it 3 years later. And since then, the damning allegations of abuse have continued.
Provo Canyon School excuses their abusive behavior by saying they are now owned by a new company, Universal Health Services. UHS, you can't silence me. The practices used and the staff employed remained and remain today the same.
Despite mounting outrage, legal settlements, and a celebrity speaking out, UHS is thriving. And child welfare agencies keep sending foster kids to facilities with troubling track records. In the final chapter of today's show, which first aired last year, Mother Jones reporter Julia Lori investigates how UHS has become part of what some call the child welfare industrial complex.
To understand Universal Health Services, you have to go back to the man who founded it, Alan Miller. Alan grew up in a working-class neighborhood in Brooklyn in the 1940s. He played basketball in college, did a stint in the Army, and got his MBA from the Wharton School.
Always was competitive, and once I got into something, I wanted to be the best at it.
This is Alan in 2010 when he won the Horatio Alger Award. The award is given to people who are supposed to personify the American dream, people who went from humble beginnings to wealth and sometimes fame. Justice Clarence Thomas, Oprah Winfrey, and Billy Graham have all won the award. And Alan fits the mold. He's built an empire of medical and psychiatric hospitals. He's a billionaire today, the kind who gets invited to talk on the Fox Business Channel.
Welcome back. Earnings alert. Universal Health Services reporting after the bell last night. Profit and revenue up from a year ago.
It was 2018, and Alan was there to talk about the company's financial growth and about growth in the mental health industry.
The demand is so great that the business is just a very sound business. And we're, and have been from the outset, a pioneer in mental health.
Alan started Universal Health Services in 1979, and his timing was perfect. State psychiatric hospitals were shutting down all over the country, and private facilities stepped in to fill the gap. In the 1980s, the for-profit psychiatric hospital industry exploded. At the same time, more and more kids were being placed in foster care, largely because of new mandatory reporting laws. People like teachers, doctors, and social workers were now required to report suspected cases of child abuse or neglect. Reported cases skyrocketed from 60,000 in 1974 to about 3 million in 2000. And all those kids, they needed places to go.
Well, along comes large corporations with beds to fill. And they kind of parachute into these different states and counties with a solution, a ready-made solution. You got kids, we got beds.
That's Ron Davidson, the psychologist we heard from earlier. He and his team spent years evaluating psychiatric facilities, writing reams of reports for the state of Illinois. He later served as a confidential informant for the DOJ investigation into UHS.
of those 400 reports that we did, you'll find countless reports where we not only slammed the hospitals for the problems that we found, we mercilessly slammed the Department of Children and Family Services.
For Ron, there were two groups to blame: failing child welfare agencies and for-profit companies like UHS that made money off of those failing agencies. This created what he calls the child welfare industrial complex.
Foster care kids are a highly profitable cash cow for corporations who essentially are not run, by the way, by medical or psychiatric professionals. They're run by business people.
For things to change, Ron says you need more social services for struggling families so that fewer kids enter the foster care system to begin with, and more community-based mental health programs so that kids can stay home rather than being institutionalized. Last year, the Department of Justice said something similar about Alaska, Trina's home state.
The Department of Justice released findings in mid-December about an investigation into allegations that the state of Alaska violated the Americans with Disabilities Act when it comes to children.
The DOJ accused the state of segregating kids with mental health issues in institutions instead of providing them treatment in their homes, just like Ron said. It was another damning report. But rather than calling out UHS, this time the DOJ's focus was on Alaska for allowing kids to languish at places like North Star. I keep thinking about this deposition I read. It came from the case of a former foster kid named Nathan Presley. He was sent to North Star again and again, starting when he was just 5 years old. And as an adult, he sued Alaska's Office of Children's Services for negligence. There's no recording of this deposition, so I asked some folks here at Reveal to read it. Nathan's lawyer is questioning an official from OCS.
So Nathan didn't really belong at North Star anymore because he didn't meet that level of care. And he was already stabilized, at least as far as North Star goes. But there wasn't any place else with the right level of care to put him.
Correct.
So he just stayed locked up in a psychiatric facility?
Yes.
For months?
Yes.
Foster kids have long suspected that they were being warehoused. And here's Alaska's child welfare agency confirming that in this one case, that's exactly what happened. But instead of taking responsibility, they shifted the blame. The Office of Children's Services turned around and sued North Star. Both ultimately settled with Nathan last year for an undisclosed sum. Now, there's another former foster kid suing.
Sometimes when I think about it, I'm like, I'm actually going to change something, you know, maybe make somebody else's life a little easier.
Trina is suing North Star and UHS for battery and false imprisonment. Her lawsuit is still pending. But North Star, they've turned around and sued Alaska's Office of Children's Services. The finger-pointing continues.
Hey.
It's going to be around that light.
Okay.
On a windy spring day, I pick up Trina and her kids from her apartment on the outskirts of Anchorage. We drive to North Star.
It was North Star. And this where... this is intense.
When's the last time you were here?
I... one of the very first time I ever came to North Star.
Wow. So, I'm just going to put us in park. We stop because we're just going to talk for a second. Talk for a second. Huh. Walk me through where we are right now.
And, like, how I'm feeling?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anxiety, mostly.
Mm. About being here, specifically?
Yeah. I didn't realize how traumatic growing up in a treatment facility was until just now. Whew. This is my childhood in one building. It's a lot. Whew. It's a lot to take in.
Trina and I get out of the car. It's a surreal moment. Behind us, on the other side of the car windows, her kids are in the back seat, watching the Lorax. In front of us are the big, reflective windows of North Star, the windows she spent countless hours looking out of when she was a child.
What do you think of the kids who might be, like, looking out the window right now?
They're probably thinking the same thing I thought. A way to escape. Probably just staring out the window, bored, waiting for the next therapy session to happen, or class, or lunch. They had you on a strict schedule. I feel so unorganized because growing up, that's how I lived, on a strict schedule. I waked up at a certain time, I eat at a certain time, I poop at a certain time, I breathe at a certain time. To going to being able to do that whenever, I don't know what to do with myself, you know? I think, like, if you were to look up institutionalized in a book, you'd see a picture of me. It's actually the definition of institutionalized.
Trina takes it all in. She points out the fenced-in play area outside, where there was always a deflated basketball. The door she tried to escape from once. The bank with customers she used to make up stories about. But her eyes keep coming back to the windows, like she's searching for something.
You know, the first time I came here, I didn't know that the windows were like mirror windows. You see yourself. So when people would walk up, I'd bang on the window, thinking they could see me. Cry for help. They can't see me at all. They just heard banging. That's about it.
After our story came out, a state representative in Alaska introduced a bill to address the problem of foster kids lingering inside locked psychiatric facilities. It's working its way through the legislature, but it's unlikely to pass this year. That story was reported by Julia Laurie from Mother Jones. You'll find a link to her written story on our website. Our lead producers this week were Neroli Price and Catherine Miskowski. They had help from Julia Laurie. Cynthia Rodriguez edited the show. Special thanks to Michael Montgomery. And thanks as well to our partners at Mother Jones, Ian Gordon, James West, and Katie Hirschenroder. Nikki Frick is our digital producer. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production managers are Stephen Rascone and Zulema Cobb. Score and sound designed by the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. Our interim executive producers are Taki Telenidis and Brett Myers. Our theme music is by Camerado, Lightning. Support for Reveals provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Park Foundation, and the Hellman Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.